And so I invite you to turn with me to the 62nd Psalm. For the better part of 30 years now, I devoted all of my preaching in the months of June and July and August to the book of Psalms. I think I preached from nearly every one of the Psalms and many of the Psalms on numerous occasions. You can never, ever exhaust what you find in the Word of God, but certainly what you find in the book of Psalms. So this morning we're going to talk about something that's very, very practical. And I want to commend you for your presence this morning. I looked out and I saw the rain. And I said to my brother, I said, you know, when you look out and see the rain back down south, that just means that there's going to be 15 to 20% of the people who are not there. I guess you don't believe in immersion in this church, do you? Do you? All right. Well, we believe Southern Baptists, you know, are strong for immersion. They're just not real strong on sprinkling. And when it rains, they don't like to come too much. So I was a little bit depressed. And then I thought, well, I don't need to be concerned. This is not my church. Whoever is there will be there and we'll seek to minister to their needs. Maybe you've heard the name of Dr. Lloyd Ogilvie. For many, many years, Dr. Lloyd Ogilvie was the pastor of Hollywood Presbyterian Church. A marvelous preacher, an outstanding writer, and more recently, just within the last few months, appointed as the chaplain for the United States Senate. But he's written a number of books, and in one of those books, he tells of an experience that he had while he was backpacking in the wilderness of northern Canada. He got lost. And as he tells the story, for hours he went around in circles, and he wasn't able to find the road that went back to the logging camp. He said, I wasn't particularly disturbed about that until I happened to gaze up and notice that the sun was beginning to go down. And then he said, I began to fear for my safety because I wasn't ready to spend the night out amongst the bears and the other wild animals. I wasn't properly prepared. But he said, as I frantically began to look here and there, I came across an overgrown path. And I began to follow that path, he said, and sure enough, all of a sudden, it came to a bit of a Y. I didn't know which path to go. But right there in the middle of that Y, there was an old stump, and a crudely printed sign was on that stump. This is the only way out. And there was an arrow that pointed to the left. And then he goes on to tell in the story. He said, you know, I don't know about you, but when somebody tells me this is the only way you can do it, there is something within me that wants to tell them or to show them, whoever them is, that I'll do it another way. I can do it a different way. And he said, I instinctively responded that way. I'm going to take the road to the right. And then he said, I looked up and the sun was further down. And he said, I quickly suppressed that urge to follow that path. And I followed the path to the left. And fortunately, he said, I soon came within about an hour, in about a mile, to the site of the logging camp down the road. And he said, obviously, there was an individual who had been just as lost as I was, who had found his way back to safety and had cared enough to come back and to post that sign. The 62nd Psalm is a psalm not about an individual who found himself lost in a wilderness, but it's the story about an individual who, in a spiritual sense, found himself lost in a spiritual maze. King David discovered a very important lesson. He discovered that the only way out was to wait on the Lord. Now that sounds so simplistic, but I submit to you that that is one of the most difficult things that any one of us can possibly do. One of the things that I had to do when I announced my retirement was to begin to think about transferring all of the things that I had down at my office back to my home. And I had a library of about 1,500 volumes. There was no place in our home for 1,500 books. That's a lot of bookshelves. And so I had to get rid of about 80% of my books. And that was a painful process. If you're a book lover, if you're a reader, certainly if you're a preacher who has lived by his books, you discover that it's difficult to give up a book that you've grown to love. And so one by one, I would go through that book, and it was a long process to see whether this is one of the books that I thought I could keep at home. And I came across one book in particular who had a tremendous amount of yellow underlining in it. I had studied it a great deal. It was a book called The Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster. And I began to reread the book, and at least the outline portions. And there was one in particular that kind of grabbed my attention. He said, "Superficiality is the curse of our age. The doctrine of instant satisfaction is a primary spiritual problem in the day and age in which we live." And that's true even in the church. We look around us in our churches, and we have a desperate need, we think, for more people. Matter of fact, your leader got up this morning and said, "We need workers. We don't just need workers. We don't just need people. We need people who are going to take care of the children while we can worship here in peace and in quiet." So we need people. We need more workers. We need more people who are able to sing. And God knows we need more people with money, because we've got to minister to the needs not only of our church, but to our outreach. My wife and I, as we were driving north from down in Florida, stopped by to see some friends in a city down south, and we had occasion to be taken by our hosts by a church. The fellow that pastored that church for many, many years was a classmate of mine at Wheaton College. And it is the most imposing edifice that I have ever seen in my life. $34 million worth. We went into the church. It's lavish. It's gorgeous. But the newspaper had been filled with stories in the last 2 weeks about the pastor who had come to the time of 63 years of age. And now, all of a sudden, he was being forced out of the church that he had given birth to. And the reason why it was stated in the newspaper was because of the fact that they were declining in their membership. And they were hitting the panic button. And they needed somebody else to come in here and fill these 6,500 seats. They had the belief that they needed more people in church. But the bottom line, folks, is that we don't need more people in church. We need more committed people. We need more spiritually mature people who make up the body of Christ. In Psalm 1, he describes that kind of an individual as being like a tree that is planted by the streams of water that yield its fruit in its season, and the leaves never wither. And then Foster went on to make this statement. He said, "You know, the number of firmly rooted trees in the Christian landscape is growing smaller, largely because of the fact that we are unwilling to let God do it." Isn't that true? Have you thought about back 25, 30 years ago, the great spiritual leaders that we had in our communities and worldwide? Where are they today? Where are they today? We don't have them. You see, even in the church, we tend to replace the long run. We tend to replace waiting with shortcuts, with gimmicks, with band-aids, We look out and we see diminishing attendance, and we say, we've got to have an attendance drive to build it up. Preacher stands up, and we've had one or two families in the church that have gotten a divorce recently. That's true in Canada. Down in the South, we've had dozens that get divorces. It's chronic. And so the preacher stands up and preaches a series of messages on the family and on home. As though I can take 6 weeks and I can solve all of the problems of marriage in 6 weeks. We plan crash courses for this and for that. But the problem is we're growing tall trees with shallow roots and mediocre growth. Carl Jung, the atheistic psychiatrist, made the statement, and I think it's all the more significant because of his background. He said, hurry is not of the devil. Hurry is the devil. And how true that is in the area of our spiritual development. David had it right in Psalm 62. And I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version because of some of the things that it makes very, very clear. He says, for God alone my soul waits in silence. Most of us don't know too much about it, and some of your translations leave out that word in silence. But for God alone my soul waits in silence. From Him comes my salvation. He only is my rock. Ask yourself this morning, can I honestly say that the one secure thing in my life only is Jesus Christ? Or am I looking to the financial assets that I'm building up? Am I looking to the comforts? Am I looking to my family? Am I looking to my friends? He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not greatly be moved. And then down in verse 5, he says, for God alone my soul waits in silence, because from Him my hope cometh. Or as the King James Version says, truly my soul waiteth on God. From Him cometh my salvation. Folks, a real quick trip through the Scriptures will remind us of how ordinary people, with one exception, became spiritual giants because they learned the lesson of waiting on God. We get to the book of Genesis, and there we find the story of Noah. You remember how God commanded Noah to build an ark. I am angry, he said. I am going to destroy every living creature and start all over again. I'm going to wipe the slate clean. And for 120 years, Noah waited on God. He built, but he waited. That's a long time to wait. I'm sure that during that time, he suffered a great deal of persecution. He suffered a great deal of ridicule. I'm sure that there were blue Mondays for Noah. Times when he began to wonder to himself, did I really understand God right? But he learned the lesson of waiting. Job, you remember, through no fault of his own, Job lost his family and his wealth and his health. One by one, those pillars, his physical, his emotional, his financial, his spiritual, his intellectual pillars, were yanked out from under him. In the pastoral prayer this morning, your leader led you to pray for several ladies who were examples in terms of their love and their commitment. That's what marriage is all about, isn't it? Aren't we supposed to be there to be a strength and an encouragement to each other? And yet after all of these years of waiting, Job's wife comes to him and she says, Job, you've been a good fella. You've lived a godly life and God's forgotten about you. He's turned his back on you. Why don't you curse God and die? That's what she said. That wasn't a lot of encouragement. And Job said, though he slay me, yet will I trust, or another word is wait, in him. Abraham was 75 years old, when God said to him, I want you to go from the city of Ur of Chaldees to a land that I'll show you, and if you do, I will make you the father of a great nation, and I will give you a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, I don't know whether you've ever taken down a biblical atlas, but if you do, you can find out that the journey from Ur to Haran to Shechem is 1,500 miles. Abraham was a very rich man, and they measured richness not in terms of their gold. That didn't do them any good. They measured richness in terms of their cattle, in terms of those kind of possessions. And so when God said, take a journey, he didn't say, gather up all of your cattle and put them on boxcars and send them down on the train. They didn't have trains. So how did they get from point A to point B? They got there the good old-fashioned way. They walked. Thousands of cattle. You can't walk very fast, folks. I'm sure there must have been many, many, many times when he drove the stakes of the tent into the ground. And then a couple of days later when he pulled them up again and they made further their journey. It took them about 100 years to make that journey. Abraham learned the lesson of waiting on God. Joseph learned that lesson. For 14 years, Joseph lay in a prison cell, charged and accused of a crime that he didn't even commit. Moses learned that lesson. 40 years of age, brought up in the king's palace, had everything that he could want. But the one thing that he didn't have was leadership with his own people. And so one day he went out and he killed two Egyptians. And he had to flee for his life. And you know, he learned the lesson of waiting real well. He spent 40 years on the backside of the desert, taking care of his father's sheep. Boy, that was a tough pill to swallow. To go back, not to your dad, but to go back to your father-in-law and say, I flunked. Didn't do so good. And to have your father-in-law say, well, I'll let you go out and take care of my sheep and see whether you can do any better with that. And he waited, and he waited, and he waited. Paul became one of the great trees of spiritual strength in the religious system of the Pharisees. Everywhere he went, he persecuted the Christians. But one day on the road to Damascus, he was struck down. He lost his eyesight. And God spoke to him, and he did 180. He turned right around, and immediately after he had received his eyesight, he determined that he was going back to Jerusalem, and he was really going to set the world straight. God said, uh-uh, wait. I got some lessons to teach you. And for 3 years, he stayed up in Damascus. We don't know really what took place during that time, but there was the molding of a saint. And then there was Jesus. I said every human being had to learn the lesson of waiting. You say, but Jesus didn't have to learn that lesson. No, not from a godly point of view. You can't get any bigger than God, can you? He was God. But he was also man. And he had to learn the lesson of waiting and enduring and suffering the sacrifice for the sacrifice of our sin. You see, he could have succumbed to the temptation of Satan. Satan said, just fall down and worship me and I'll give you it all. But he waited before he could ascend back to the Father. Now, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say this. If you want to grow in your spiritual experience. What does a pastor talk about when he comes into a congregation that he's never seen before? He doesn't know where they are spiritually. I came to the conclusion very, very quickly. If we're not Christians, there's one thing that's more important than anything else, isn't there? And that's coming to a place where you put your faith and your trust in Jesus Christ. And you may be here this morning, and you may be in that group of people. If you are, don't go out of those doors without finding out what it means to become a child of God. But if you are a part of the family of God, should we not all want to be growing in our spiritual experience? And yet how few of us have learned the lesson of waiting on the Lord. And even those who have still have a tendency to make waiting the exception rather than the rule. You know, when we come to a door that's locked, what is our normal intuition? Well, we'll pick the lock. I mean, if we want to go through that door, we're going to get there. Maybe God has closed it on purpose. We come to the end of a road, and there's no place to go. Maybe God is saying, don't go. But our tendency is to plow a new road. Why? Because we're impulsive. We want instant solutions. But waiting on God is the process that He uses to mature us. There's something else that we need to learn about this waiting on God. If we truly wait, you say, I do believe in that. I do wait on God. All right, here's the test. If you're really waiting on God, there'll be no need to be anxious. No need to worry. Waiting and worrying don't go together. They're opposites. When we worry, we're not waiting. And so Psalmist says, for God alone my soul waits in silence. Who should we wait for? How should we wait? Why should we wait? Well, we should wait on God. Not on our in-laws, not on a promotion, not on that beautiful somebody coming into my life so that I can get married. For God alone, my soul waits. From Him comes my salvation. He is my only hope. Someone has suggested that many times our strength become our weaknesses. And that's true. Is it not in your own life? You find that when things come into your life that are adversarial, when circumstances seem to swamp you, how quick we find a way back to that quiet place to lay it before God. But when the promotions come, and when everything just seems to be going the way it's supposed to go, we don't find ourselves making that journey quite so often. We don't need God quite as much. Why wait on Him? Because in Him alone our needs are met. How should we wait? Well, first of all, He says we're to wait in silence. The fact is, God can't speak, or at least you and I can't hear, as long as we're talking. Ever engage in conversation with people who never stop talking? When you're both talking, you don't really get a lot out of it, do you? God says, be still and know that I am God. Someone shared with me a number of years ago something that has changed my devotional life completely. He said, whenever you go to God in prayer, spend the first 60 seconds of your time in silence. I've never had God speak to me in audible ways. When we stopped off in Greenwich on our way up here, they shared a book with me that had been written by a young Catholic layman who is just sweeping the country. And he's written this book, and all he has done is revealed in the book the things that God has verbally spoken to him, and he has simply translated them into writing. But when you go down and read them, there is not one difference between what has been written and what is already in the Word of God. God has spoken. Maybe He has spoken to you in a voice that's so loud that you can hear it and understand it. I haven't had that privilege. But I have discovered that when I am willing to wait and just let the Spirit of God begin to direct my thoughts, it many times becomes far more than 30 seconds or 60 seconds. It becomes 5 minutes, 10 minutes when God is speaking to me. Wait on the Lord in silence. For God alone my soul waits, not only in silence, but in verse 2 he says, in confidence, in stability. The prophet Isaiah puts it another way when he says, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Folks, we're not just talking about waiting in a void. We're not just talking about the mystical kind of meditation that takes place in India and China and some of these other places where the rich and the movie stars go to get their own guru to help them in their time of meditation. No. When we're meditating upon God, we're meditating upon the eternal one. We're meditating upon the one who has always been. We're meditating upon the one who is all powerful, ever present, knows everything, the end from the beginning. We're contemplating the greatness of who he is. Makes a difference. Why should we wait? Well, the results of waiting are many. He says he gives us our salvation. From him alone cometh my security, my rock, my hope, my glory. And then down in verse 11, he says, once God has spoken, twice I have heard, that power belongs to God. He is the source of power in my life. I don't know what it's like. I grew up in this country. Never did go to college here, so I don't know what college registration is like here. And I guess I don't know what it's like down south anymore, because it was 45 years ago that I went to college. But I remember when we went to college and they set up registration in the gym. And there were tables all around the outside. And the professors would be there and you would have to go in. Some of you are smiling, so maybe you've gone through that same experience. And it was a frustrating experience because many, many times you'd get to the table where you wanted to register for this course only to find out that class had been closed. Very frustrating when you find out that that's a required class for you to get your degree and it's not going to be offered for another year. Well, on this one occasion, this young fella, he was a freshman in college and he had the fortune of having the college registrar kind of walk him through. And he said, now you need to take this course. And he decided which of the courses he was going to take. Finally, they drew up the agenda and he gave it to him, and the young fellow looked at it and he said, aren't there any easier courses? And I bowed out of a few courses that I very quickly decided I'd made a mistake on. And he said, oh yes, there are easier courses. It all depends on what you want to accomplish. And then he made this statement to him. When God makes an oak tree, it takes him 100 years. When he makes a squash, it takes 6 months. What do you want to be? Maybe you remember the story of Alice in Wonderland. On one occasion, Alice comes to a junction in the road, and she asks her ever-present Cheshire Cat, Cheshire Puss, would you please tell me where I ought to go from here? To which the wise cat responded, that depends a great deal on where you want to go. I don't much care where, she said. Well, then it doesn't matter which way you go, does it? Now, folks, there is a spiritual application to that cute little story. You see, a lot of us are like the college freshmen that want the easy course. We don't want to go through the tedious waiting. But that's the way it has to be. If you are going to grow in your Christian life, growing comes by waiting. Growing comes by trusting, by praying, by resting, by being obedient to the direction and to the command of the Lord. Verse 12, he says, unto the Lord belongs steadfast love and obedience, and thou dost requite a man according to his work. Leslie Brandt summarizes this psalm in his translation of verse 12 when he says, commit your life to Jesus, and you shall discover an anchor that will hold firm despite the chaos of this experience that we call life. There isn't a one of us here this morning who hasn't experienced the chaos of this thing that we call life. And you may be here this morning. You may not even know why you're here. You know your life's in a mess. God desires to minister to that need. And so I encourage you to go to the Lord. I encourage you to wait on the Lord and let Him direct your paths.